under the breach, dear friend.
Yeah, let's close the wall up with our English dad.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And our disclosure is that we, Jake and I, and I'm Jeff, Jake and Jeff, Jeff and Jake.
And in the order.
Right. Our disclosure is that he wears a brown beard and I wear a white beard, and he wears plaid and I wear plain.
Now that we've disclosed that, we should also say that we are also the principals at an SEC-registered investment advisory firm, and that's who you would send any complaints about things that we talk
what,
about.
What, to the today. Firm?
Yeah.
Well, and it's also, by the way, the firm is also named the Personal Wealth Coach. Now, we've been working on the correlation. We've discovered that the R-squared of that particular correlation is exactly
0.9999999999.
I think it's just 1. No, we don't put the circled R when we say it on the air.
That's true.
There is a slight variance in the correlation. So, anyway.
Most people haven't a clue what we just said. And
that's
probably a good thing for their own sanity.
That should tell you a lot about us. We are professional geeks. Da-da-da-da!
Yes. It's what we do for a living.
And we're pretty geeky.
We give advice on how you can be geeky, too.
Yes, you too. The thing about
geeks... With money.
There's a slight mistranslation in Matthew in the New Testament where it says the meek shall inherit the earth. It's actually the geek.
The geek.
And if you don't believe that, take a look at Bill Gates sometimes. Anyway, telephone numbers to call in here. If today where you are is January 9th, 2016, then you can give us a call in here because then we're live. Otherwise, we're dead. No.
Not dead.
Well, dead is the opposite of live.
We're in living black and white, maybe?
I don't know.
We would
like
still
that.
Be alive, just not
just somewhere alive. Else. It's a time warp issue. But the telephone numbers are 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
So did anything interesting happen during the week?
Yes.
Oh, good.
We began the week on a Sunday, unless you believe that the week begins on Monday. Those are both interesting. The debate continues. As far as the rest of the week, I think it progressed in normal order, followed by Tuesday, Wednesday, so on, all the way up to today and Saturday.
Well, actually, considering that both Saturday and Sunday, we were having a debate this morning at the house about that, are the weekend.
But which end are they? Are they
Friday,
the beginning?
But Friday is the end of the week.
Uh-huh.
So the end of the week is very different from the weekend.
Yes.
Friday is not considered to be part of the weekend, but it is the end of the week.
And they say it's the weekend when they should be saying it's the weekends, because Saturday is one end and Sunday is the other end, and they just meet there.
Actually, I have concluded we need an entirely two word for the Saturday-Sunday, whatchamacallit.
You don't just want to pluralize the word end?
No, I think...
Weekends?
The issue is that the week begins on Monday, it ends on Friday for... Almost everybody.
And Saturday and Sunday don't exist.
But it's a separate time entity.
Right.
It's not a week. It's a strong.
Right.
That would be the opposite of a week.
So this is the strong, and we're going back to work on the week.
Right.
Right. And
well, it's
yes.
the opposite of the week.
We should call it something.
I really do think we should call Saturday and Sunday something other than the weekend, because it's not the weekend.
But we won't have anything to confuse future archaeologists with if we... get rid of all of our irrationalities. Just think how much fun future archaeologists are going to have looking at statements written about the weekend. What do they mean? Monday?
Well, actually,
Saturday, Sunday. Which day is the weekend?
And then they're going to talk about the holy days.
That's the holidays.
But it's spelled H-O-L-I.
Holy days.
The holy days.
Yes, holy days.
And they're going to try to figure out, you know, who this god was called Milk.
MLK. It's a holy day for MLK.
It's MLK Day.
It's a very holy day.
It's holy. He must
Abraham
be
Abraham Lincoln.
We don't do Lincoln birthday. Anymore.
Well, it's a president's day.
So yeah, but that's a sets a precedent.
Oh, right. The holy day that sets a precedent.
Right.
Okay, so what else happened this week besides the silliness that is underneath everything that happens?
Price of oil dropped to $32 and something cents a barrel. The storage capacity in the United States for gasoline is approaching its limits. Which, and we are witnessing in context the inelasticity of demand.
Yes. What that means is that demand sags like old socks sometimes.
Well, what basically, the fact that the price of gasoline has come way down,
mm-hmm.
in some commodities, that would indicate that people would then go buy more of it. But
right.
But they really are more restricted by their time than they are by their desire to drive places.
Correct.
So they don't go buy a lot more gasoline despite the fact that the price came down.
Gasoline is a lot like toothpaste in that area.
Really?
And that you generally don't go on your way home and buy three crates of it. You don't stock up on 97 extra gallons of gasoline unless you own a farm and are going to use the gasoline to run some trucks somewhere. Gasoline, it goes bad over time.
Yeah, it does. Gasoline goes bad over time, and it is expensive and extremely dangerous to store. And by the way, the nature of humanity, the nature of us economic animals... Uh-oh, I'm going to get in trouble over there.
Oh, we're animals.
Is that during periods of high prices, like during the 1973 Arab oil embargo, when the price of gasoline shot to the unbelievably high costs of over $1 a gallon, in some places.
Right.
People hoarded gasoline.
Put it in their pockets.
They put it in their garages. And as a result, there were buildings burning down and exploding because people were trying to store gasoline in their garages against the imminent threat of not having any gasoline. And people tend to do that. For example, people bought a lot of gold at or near the high price for gold.
Well, let me throw in inflation. We'll get a pretty good...
You're going to throw in inflation?
I
want to see that.
I'm going to use a slow ball here for the throwing in of inflation. But in March of 1980, which is the height of the Arab oil embargo...
No. Was that 73?
Well, 73, we had...
It was only for 73.
Okay, so 73, we had a spike from... $19 a barrel real with inflation mm-hmm. taken
right,
out
right.
with today's dollars to about $50 a barrel.
Right. And gasoline, though, was in very short supply for a while, so they were gas lines.
Right. And in 1980, we had another spike.
Mm-hmm.
We had a huge spike that led to the crash in the oil industry that some of us remember, and it went up to $111 a barrel mm-hmm. in real terms, mm-hmm. in today's dollars, not 1980 dollars. And we went higher than that in, in May of 2008. And in June of 2008, we went higher than that. The rest of the spike has been lower than that. We had a drop immediately after that big spike in 2008. And then we had sustained spike for a while.
It was for 147. It was in 2011 or 12.
Right. Pulling out inflation, because we had there's inflation involved across the board here. I can show you the chart. And what it says is that in real dollars, in a constant state dollar, our prices have been high, but not record high unless you go back to 2008. Now, if we put inflation in, we've had record high. We've got 140, 142 dollars a mm-hmm. barrel, and... Well, now we're down to 32.
Right. And therein, there's two things that happened during the week, obviously. Three things. One was a result of the other two. And one of them is that the United States stock markets, the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, both dropped around 6% for the week, which, by the way, did set an all-time record for the first week of the year, but not an all-time record for any given week. For example... neither the Dow nor the S&P either dropped as much or are as far down as they were last year in August. And so it just happens that this happened to be towards the beginning of the week. And when you look at the underlying United States economy, also during this week, we added, and this is going to be subject to revision and probably upward, 292,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Now,
that's a lot of jobs.
The consensus expectations was 223. Normally that would cause a market jump upward, but it didn't. It caused the market to on Friday to go up a little bit, and then towards the end of the day to go down a lot. It wasn't a cause and effect thing. So what are the big things that people were afraid of last week? One is the Chinese market plunged 7% and then plunged some more, and the circuit breakers kept kicking in China, which means their market wasn't working very well. So finally down about 11%.
I mentioned this on the way in. I should have, or we should have, spoken last week about China being unstable and the 6-month restriction that they had from the prior crash of their market, where the government had clamped down on selling certain ways in their market, were being released this last week. And when they released them, we had the same exact thing happen as what had happened before they put the restrictions in place, which was the Chinese market went completely insane. We should have said something about it, but we didn't. And the reality is that anybody that had researched into China would see that this was going to happen, and it did. And it shouldn't have been a surprise, except that we say that about a lot of things. Every time the Greek debate popped up again, that was happening for 8 years, and every time the debate popped up, it was like a complete new surprise. And I think that the market has a very short memory.
I think you're correct. When you consider that the traders on the market, high-speed traders,
their memory is
considering
milliseconds.
Considering long-term holding being 5 nanoseconds. Yeah, that's true. But I want to go into that, I want to discuss this. You undoubtedly have looked at it very carefully too. But there's a couple of issues here that are, in my opinion, very, very large, that we do not understand very well, and certainly the market traders don't even want to understand. The Chinese stock market in no way reflects the Chinese economy.
Correct.
Our stock market, to some degree, does reflect, at least in the long term.
The long term, yeah.
The Chinese economy is still largely state-controlled.
It's not publicly owned.
There are some very wealthy people who invest in the market. They're amateurs. They're brand new.
And by amateurs, it's like there's no equivalent in the United States except for somebody that's been living in a bomb shelter for the last 60 years.
And their movements, when the market moves in the United States, at least in the long term, if it makes a major movement, it's because of economic expectations. In China, it's because of political expectations. And so what happened in the market in China is really pretty simple. The Chinese economy is, depending on who you listen to, expected to be growing about 6.4 to 6.8, 6.3% this year, GDP. Now, whether or not that's real, it's at least consistent with the way we've been measuring it before.
Right.
Now, here's the issue. A few years ago, it was growing at 10 and 12% a year. It's slowing. The rate of growth is slowing down, and it has to, because trees don't grow to the sky, and there is something called diminishing returns. As an economy gets larger, its ability to grow faster shrinks.
Right. And just as a quick example of that, to make it easy to understand, if there's a peasant standing in a rice paddy with no shoes on, planting rice, getting pennies a day, less than that in some cases, and they get hired to work in a factory, they still have to be trained to work in the factory. Okay, so they start working in the factory. The difference in that factory is the training level isn't that high. You don't have to be trained for years and years to get into that factory. So you get into the factory and your pay not only doubles, it triples, it quadruples. You're making dollars a day. You're making hundreds, in some cases, of times more money than you did before.
Mm-hmm. So that's fast growth.
But the next step up, to design the factory line or to
operate a piece of complex machinery.
Right. You've got a lot more training involved there. That slows down the growth. Now, that doesn't mean that the growth won't exist. It just means it's a lot slower because the workup, the learning curve keeps getting steeper. You've got to keep learning new techniques. And there's a level at which it's really hard to take 50 people out of a rice paddy, train them in one place and then train them in a higher place and then train it. You start losing people who are not willing to continue to train.
And
at the end, you wind up with just a few people willing to train to get to a higher level.
It's not that China isn't growing. It's not that China is fundamentally unhealthy. But there's two major issues. Number one, the growth rate is going to continue to slow. Now, the Chinese economy isn't slowing. It's just growing less fast. Second issue, the leadership in China is more concentrated than it has been since Chairman Mao. And there is clearly a conscious effort being made by the central government to lower the value of the Chinese currency, which may be called, you may be hear it called the renminbi, which is the people's currency.
Or the yuan.
Or the yuan, which is equivalent of saying a dollar.
It's I mean, it's really both of those words put together. Yeah. It's a renminbi yuan.
Right. And so here's the point. They decided to start measuring their currency against a basket of other currencies rather than against the dollar. And they have allowed market forces very slightly by a very few percent to reduce the value of the external market for their currency. Now, the external market for the currency outside of their country is very small.
They don't like to allow their currency outside of their country.
And what happened was the relatively wealthy amateur speculators who were in the Chinese stock market basically saw that their value of their investments dropped simply because the Chinese devalued their currency. Now, they see that further devaluations are probably coming because the Chinese want to have more exports.
Right. That's
and they're in a price war with Japan and Europe. Europe has already devalued their currency by about a third against the dollar. The Japanese have said they haven't done this publicly or intentionally. They've allowed the market to do it, but in fact, they pushed it.
They devalued the currency.
Because they've got it, frankly, in Europe, in the entire Eurozone right now, unemployment is at 10.9%. Now, that's twice what we have. It is horrific. It is expensive. In some places, it's up to 30%. So what they're doing is they're intentionally 50% of Germany's GDP is exports compared to 13% of the United States.
Right. And look, just real quick, you mentioned unemployment. And we've had callers call in and say, well, there's another unemployment number that people don't read off very often. It has something to do with this is and that. It's called the U6.
Right.
The U6 unemployment is everybody who at one time was employed and has just stopped looking for work.
Mm-hmm.
There's some problems with it. There's some major problems with it because it doesn't take into account retirement very well. And we've got a baby boom retiring. But if you take the U6 numbers, which China doesn't release, the European Union doesn't release this stuff. But if we were able to look at it, the places like Spain where they've got 30% unemployment, it's closer to 50%.
The U6 in the United States is like 6.6% right now. But you know where the U6 came from? I just looked at, I think it was maybe it's higher than that, 10% something. Basically, I found out where the U6 came from. By the way, the Federal Reserve does not track the U6.
It's at 10.
Okay. The Federal Reserve doesn't track the U6. The news media do. They create it. And you know where they got it? They got it from the Clinton campaign when they were running against George H.W. Bush. The Clinton campaign came up with a new unemployment figure, which they called the U6, to show that unemployment was really a lot higher than people thought it was, so that they would get elected. And it worked. And since then, people have been paying attention to it like it was created by economists. It really wasn't. It was created by a political campaign. The point is, in Europe, they have high unemployment. Europe has a very high percentage of its gross domestic product and thereby its jobs, like 50%, that are created by exports. They got to sell mostly to us, by the way. And so lowering the value of their currency on international markets, the euro, creates more business because their products are less expensive when they go to sell them against the United States. For example, if China wanted to buy Airbus or Boeing and the euro is down a third, well, that just was a 30% discount on the Airbus. Despite the fact, by the way, despite all of that, again, in 2015, Boeing beat Airbus.
Well, part of that is that even with the rise of the dollar, it's not quite as strong as the euro.
So this is it, and so the end result is the Chinese are in a currency war with Japan, who is consciously devaluing. They are publicly and consciously devaluing their currency.
They're doing it on
purpose.
To
get more exports, to get more people employed.
They are very, very much centered on an export economy. The Chinese have been converting to a consumer economy. They're trying to. And they've reached right about 50% of their economy as consumer now versus export. And that's a big deal for them. They've been working on this for a long time. Now, one other piece of information here that's rocked the Chinese economy and has rocked our economy is that Donald Trump has stated, in an interview with the New York Times, that he would put a 45% tariff on Chinese goods, all Chinese goods coming into the United States. And that is extremely terrifying to anybody that understands world trade. What it means is that U.S. companies, Dell, Microsoft, Apple, Google, you just start going down the list of all of our major manufacturers. Mm-hmm. We have factories there, which means American goods manufactured in another country being brought back to the United States would be taxed at a 45% rate to protect American workers.
Which, where we have something approaching full employment, right?
Right. We have an unemployment rate of 5%. Industrial sides of things, what we're shifting to in the United States, because our labor prices are too high, this is not going to protect American workers. What it's going to do is cause the Chinese to lose a lot of jobs and us to buy a lot of robots. And as a example of that, I've mentioned this in the past, but if you go to Portland and look at Oregon as a whole, the unemployment rate in restaurant employees has dropped, just like it has with the rest of the country. But in Portland, where they've recently raised the minimum wage up to $15 an hour, the unemployment rate in restaurant employees is through the stratosphere, because people are getting rid of their restaurant employees. McDonald's has replaced them with machines. If you look at the way Tesla makes cars, they use less than a tenth of the number of employees that General Motors does, because they're using robots. And the robots are a little too expensive to use on most of the manufacturing facilities, but not 45% too expensive. If you get a tariff of 45%, it just means that we make a lot of robots. And those robots right now are being made in China off of American plants. So we would have to make the robots in the United States. And what that does to the world economy would probably put the world as a whole in a depression, because 45% is not a minuscule change. That is a huge difference.
Well, one of the things also that I don't think people are paying a lot of attention to at all, and I just told Ed Laughlin as he was leaving this, people, particularly on the Republican side, are trying to compete with Trump right now.
Yeah.
And what Donald Trump keeps saying he's going to do are things that the president simply can't do under our Constitution. You can't discriminate against his specific religion. You can't, the president of the United States can't determine that he's going to build a wall on the border. His TV ad, he finally is running some paid-for TV ads. I don't know if you noticed that, in six states. His TV ads say those are the two cornerstones of what he's going to do. He's going to build a wall.
Congress has to do that.
And Congress has to do it. And B, even Congress couldn't pass a law effectively banning people from a given religion.
Right.
That would be the United States taking a position on which religion a person can. Putting religion,
that's a state religion.
Religious restrictions on there. And the bottom line to it is, I don't want the United States putting religious restrictions on there, because they could all determine, for example, as people were terrified that John Kennedy was going to do.
Right, as a Catholic.
You either have to be a Catholic or you can't vote, or something like that. I mean, that would be the next step. It's the same thing.
And it's happened in a lot of other countries. Mm-hmm. So it's not a pie-in-the-sky idea. It's part of the reason why the Constitution exists. It's as important as the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or any of the other amendments. It is a First Amendment. is the ability to speak against the government. It's the ability to pursue your God in your own way. It's the reason why we were established as a country, because a lot of other religions got kicked out of the countries they were in.
So there's basically two big things that happened that should not by themselves have driven the market down, except the fact that the stock market in the short term runs on emotional sentiment. And the bottom line is, and I actually saw quotes published on this, trader said, "The market just crashed in China. They must know something we don't know. Sell." Well, they don't know anything we don't know. As a matter of fact, what they're concerned about, what the people who are selling in China is concerned about, is the edicts of the Chinese government concerning the market. That's their principal concern. And the edicts of the Chinese government concerning their currency. And there is a strong attempt to get money out of the country. Because they think the leadership in China is pretty inept. And I think we saw that pretty clearly. I don't think the Chinese government had any idea that the decision to lower the value of their currency would cause their stock market to crash. And they don't make public statements about these things. They're from different departments. And basically, there's an immature, developing government in China. And they're doing silly things in their new stock market. And the United States stock market, which has really no impact from these things, is ready to bolt and be scared. Jake has said this on several occasions. We have a bunch of people running for office who, in whose best interest it is clearly that they beat up on the United States, beat up on our economy, beat up on our policies, and say nothing good about anything that's happened in the past. As a result, we tend to get really pessimistic. And we don't recognize that this is the healthiest economy in the world. We don't recognize that our unemployment is the lowest in the world, developed world. We don't recognize that we have the greatest prosperity. We have a defense that may not equal the rest of the world, although by some measures it does, or equals or exceeds it. But we're the only people in the world with aircraft carrier groups routinely circling the planet. I'll say that without any possibility of somebody confusing it with something else. We are running scared of nothing. But the underlying business economy, I want to tell you how to check it. It's really simple. Go to the store.
Yeah, any store. Preferably one with lots of stores in the vicinity.
Right. And for example, I'm going to give you, there's a whole series of things I recommended for a person who was scared to do. You know, go to Lowe's, go to Home Depot, go to all these places. I choose to go to Ace Hardware.
Okay.
And I went into our local Ace Hardware store in Salado, Texas. And the place was jammed with people wearing red shirts. Now, there were lots of customers in there, too.
Red shirts being the uniform of the
Ace
Hardware.
Right. I mean, like, they had one red-shirted employee per customer.
They're obviously not fans of Star Trek.
Right. Well, here's...
Neither is H-E-B.
So I asked what was going on, and it turns out that this is not the regular red shirt staff. This is the entire staff, not just the shift, the entire staff from a store that doesn't exist yet. They're training... red shirts, they're training the customer attendants, whatever they call them, at Ace Hardware. Because the local Keith's Ace Hardware section of Ace Hardware is opening up a new store in Belton. Now, Belton is really close to Lowe's and Home Depot. Now, what does that mean? That means that people who have their thumb, their finger right on the pulse of the economy, who really, really, really are going to be affected by the really, really, really real economy, have concluded
that it's a good time to expand.
That they can have higher prices than Lowe's and Home Depot, provide better service, and make a profit greater than that of Lowe's or Home Depot.
Yeah. And it's the same concept. If our economy was not doing as well as it was, Target and Whole Foods would be in trouble because Walmart would be eating their lunch because Target's prices, by and large, right. is higher than Walmart. They've got different products. Some of them are higher quality. Some of them are less. They try to make a point of giving an atmosphere of higher quality. And Whole Foods definitely has higher prices. Whether or not you get higher quality is kind of irrelevant.
It's debatable,
it gives you the
right.
feeling that you're getting higher quality because it's more expensive.
And we don't have a Whole Foods here in Temple, but we've got, I don't know, what's it? There's a healthy food store over there. It's across from it's on I-35 across from the complex that it holds Home Depot and Target. If you really want to know what's going on in the economy, go in there and count people, because those people are willing to spend a third to 50% more for food that makes them feel better about eating it.
Right. And when we look at that, we see consumer spending is up, and we can see that in the national figures. We can see it in the anecdotal evidence by going to a Whole Foods. If you go to a Whole Foods, be prepared to pay your whole paycheck. That's what we call it, is the whole paycheck. And you get a lot of food, and you get food that you aren't used to going to other places, and you look at it and you go, oh, organic pizza rolls, which tastes a little bit different, but not much different from normal pizza rolls.
Very different from the inorganic ones that are made out of granite.
No, it's a different kind of organic. We're not talking chemistry, except that we are. We're talking lack of chemistry. Well, wait a minute. It's a marketing move.
No, you got it. You got it. Folks, I got to say this. I'm sorry. I really am sorry, but I got to say it anyway.
The definition of organic is living products.
Yeah. Oil products are by definition organic.
Yeah.
You put them on crops and put them in the soil,
it causes
the plants to be non-organic. I don't get that.
I don't either.
I mean, like Lynn Woolley now.
It doesn't make sense. Well, we sound like us in that we say these things, that the whole concept of the word, this is an organic product or non-genetically modified. Well, how did you breed it then? Genetics change with breeding. I mean, it's a concerted effort to change the genetics of stuff.
But what happens is when you watch people who spend the money, and I hope I haven't offended too many people.
It doesn't matter.
But this is the point. If you watch people who are willing to spend money on organic food and that type of thing, they, by definition, have more money to spend than they need to stay alive.
Yeah.
And they have excess money to spend, and they're spending it. And that tells me that our economy is in great shape, because it is the luxury side of the economy that falls the fastest if we're headed downhill.
Right. If we look at 2007 and we look at sales at Whole Foods, sales dropped drastically at Whole Foods. Target sales dropped drastically. Walmart sales increased. We're seeing the opposite now. Walmart's saying, well, we're getting less sales than we expected.
Right, they are.
Target's saying, we got good sales. Whole Foods is saying, we've got good sales. It's because people have more money than they used to have.
And Ace Hardware, which has high prices but a lot of good service, is opening a new store in Belton.
Right. So throw all that together.
I'm giving a lot of free advertisement to Keith's Ace Hardware.
Well, if you throw that all together, what we can see is the beginnings of a picture. If we apply that same research across the country, we do still see spots of really nasty stuff happening where people are not buying from Whole Foods and Whole Foods are not opening stores there.
Speaking of opening stores, though,
we've got commercials to play.
Yeah, I hate it, but we, you know,
we're capitalists.
We're capitalists. Anyway, we're going to play some commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, January 9th, 2016. You're welcome to give us a call on the other side of commercials at
773-1400 or 1-866-597-1400.
773-1400 is that first one. Thank you very much for having patience with my brain deadness, and we'll be back on the other side of commercials, Lord willing.
Hello?
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have to again disclose that we disclaim anything that's said by anybody who advertises on here, in particular that last one. By the way, I'm familiar with that, and I haven't actually gone to the website and checked it out, however, but the reason it's called Dollar Disaster 14 is he predicted it would happen in 2014. So, you can take whatever you want away from that. I will say that anytime somebody is predicting disaster in any form or fashion in the future, they're either so out of it that probably shouldn't be trusted with anything, or they're out to get your money, and they're going to be pretty sophisticated and try to scare you. And admittedly, we've asked that those things not be on the show, but we can't control the advertising, and that's the way the free market system works. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, January 9th. Telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 and
1-866-597-1400.
It's the big thing to take away from what happened last week, I think. Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention one other thing before we get into the big thing to take away.
All right.
I read some things that said that when the first week of the month in the stock market is down. By the way, the decline in the first week
of the year.
Of
the stock market, yes.
Of this stock market is the greatest since we've been measuring these things. And I have read some things that says when the first week of the year is down in some very high percentage of the cases, the stock market will be down for the rest of the year. That is so profoundly untrue. As a matter of fact, I got to checking it. The difference between an up week and a down week in the stock market
For the first week of the year.
For the first week of the year is exactly 50%. Let me take that back. It's not a true statement. In years where the stock market declines substantially in the first week of the year,
it's a 50%.
50% of the time, the market was down at the end of the year, and 50% of the time, the market was up at the end of the year.
Let me say this. The end of the year and the beginning of the year in the stock market have absolutely no weight. You don't say, is the price of Apple going to change because December 31st changes to January 1? I'm not suggesting that you buy Apple. I'm using them as an example.
You can just simply say an Apple.
An Apple. That works just as well. Well, it's a different day today, so it might be worth a lot more or a lot. No, that's not how it works. And it doesn't affect the difference between December 31st to January 1st or January 1st to January 5th or 7th as a week doesn't affect what you're going to pay for an Apple December of the same year later.
It's
irrelevant. It's like saying the Super Bowl was won by a specific team, and when that team wins, the stock market tends to do this.
Right.
But they don't correlate. So this is an old academic statement, and it's one of those things that if you can understand it, it really goes a long ways. Correlation is not causation. Make sure that you have a cause before you say, well, this correlates, because
this is the great irony. If China was the major cause, theoretically, of the market declining this week, which theoretically it was, and it's significant because it's the first week of the year, right?
Right.
Follow this. Okay. It's not the first week of the Chinese New Year.
No, it's not.
it's just a random week for China. And so if you really wanted to think that the first week of the year has something to do with the Chinese markets, you probably ought to take a look at the Chinese market on the first week of their New Year and see what they do. Not that it would have any effect one way or the other. By the way.
Okay. Oh, wait. I'm going to tell you that there's a correlation of about 99%.
Right.
Between the divorce rate from the year 2000 to the year 2009 in Maine and the per capita consumption of margarine. They don't have anything to do with each other, but there's
divorce
a correlation.
I think they may. We can work on this.
Right. They
may have something to do with the production of cows and butter in. Now, this isn't margarine, but not butter.
Right. The number of people who died in bedsheet accidents between the years 2000 and 2009 correlates at a 96.9% rate with the profits from skiing on mountains.
They're both white.
So when people talk about the Super Bowl being won means something for the market, or what happens on a given day spreading to the rest of the market, it doesn't make any sense, because that's not why people buy in the stock market. You don't say, in October, I'm not going to buy this investment for my child's education because the first week of this year wasn't good. That's not part of the decision process.
There's another little element here. The earnings yield on the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index is now, at the end of the week, at 6%. Now, what does that mean? It's very rare in the history of markets that we see the earnings yield on the S&P 500. The dividend yield, by the way, the dividend yield on the S&P 500 is approximately the same as the interest yield on the 10-year treasury right now. And what does that mean? Do those things, what's the correlation or not correlation? It's extremely rare in history that if you owned a basket of Standard & Poor's 500 stocks through an index fund or an ETF, I wouldn't recommend an ETF after what they did in August, but if you owned them, and you were going to, and you took the dividend yield and treated it as interest, that it would be the same as a 10-year treasury. And the reason I say that is that during the next 10 years, if interest rates go up, the treasury could drop. It could drop substantially if you bought a 10-year treasury bond today. Now, you would get $1,000 back 10 years from now, a 10-year treasury note.
Plus whatever interest they agreed to pay on the face of that.
You know, you'd get your interest.
Bond.
You'd get your interest back quarterly. A quarter of the total year's interest would be sent to you once every 3 months. And at the end of the time, you get your $1,000 back. If we had any inflation between now and then, the $1,000 would be worth less than you could buy less with
but
that $1,000.
It's still $1,000. It's exactly what they said.
And you'd get a little over 2%. If you bought the S&P 500 index and you held it for 10 years, you would also get...
By the way, you can't directly purchase the index.
But you can purchase a
clone
derivative.
Funds. And none of the clone derivatives are exactly the same.
But you can...
it's pretty close.
If you went out and bought one of the low cost S&P 500 index funds from a major mutual fund company, you would get about the same yield in the first year. Now, here's the difference. Historically, the dividend on the S&P 500 rises in a 10-year period, so you would be getting more interest dividends back 5 years from now, in all likelihood, than you would be today. The second thing that happens is, unless the stock market is hugely overpriced, as it was in 2000, when the price-to-earnings ratio was 30, it's like 15 point something now. So the stock market is half of where it was in 2000 or 1929, those two times. Except for those unusual times, the stock market has always been higher 10 years later, much higher. So the end result is, if you bought into the S&P 500 today and you held it for 10 years, you would get more yield.
Maybe.
And, dividends have gone up pretty consistently even during depressions. So you'd probably get more yield. And you'd probably get a lot better return on your money.
This is based
than
on
you would
history.
In a treasury bond, a treasury note. When we hit one of those times in history, it doesn't mark a market top. It marks a market bottom.
Yeah.
The market is not crashed, and yet the economics, the long-term economics of the United States stock market right now say it is abnormally low. The other thing, one other item. I know I'm going on a long soliloquy here.
Right. That's fine.
Here's the other thing. The fear index is abnormally high, which marks low markets, not high markets.
Right. When the fear index is really high, it's good news. When it's really low, it's bad news. And I know that sounds weird, because the fear index measures how many people are afraid in the country about the stock market. And or how much fear they have about the stock market. And when they don't have fear, then that's the time you really should be afraid, because nobody's taking precautions. When everybody's afraid, everybody's taking precautions. It's very unlikely in a really high fear environment to be surprised. And that's where we are right now. And that's part of the reason why we have the volatility that we have based on silliness. Because the reality with China, you know, the Chinese stock market having trouble, we don't export a whole lot of stuff to China. We get a lot of stuff from China, which means that the Chinese having trouble, that commodity prices dropping, the dollar going up, buying from China is getting easier.
Right. It's getting less expensive.
We can buy more stuff from China. That should have a good impact on our economy. But because of fear, it has the other way around. Now, Africa, on the other end, is, as a continent, is on the precipice with China going low on purchasing commodities. That's really what's been running the train in Africa. Most of Africa has been running on commodity sales to the rest of the world. Copper and iron and such going to China, oil going to everywhere, and those prices have all dropped.
This would not be a good time to be living in Africa.
Right at the same time that El Nino is hitting, and we know there's going to be a big drought in Ethiopia, and Eastern Africa is going to be going through a lot of stuff, right at the same time that their economy is going to be crashing. So not good to be in Africa at the moment, but it's good to travel right now. The dollar is going a long ways wherever you want to go.
You got that. And money is here we are in the healthiest economy in the world. With our dollar, we're concerned because the dollar keeps rising. And we have low unemployment. We're the only country in the world raising interest rates. Because we're approaching full employment.
Right. Not full unemployment. That would be uncomfortable.
Right. And we're so much more healthy than the rest of the world, but we're terrified. Yeah. You are listening to Personal Wealth Coach. We're approaching the end of this first hour on Saturday, January 19th, 2016.
January 9th, 2016.
January 9th, I'm sorry, 2016. Well, it's like, yeah, okay. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail. During the week, we have people 947-1111 or
1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. There's voicemail waiting there. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.